One of the first things out of my son's mouth this morning made me wish that it was opposite day, because he was, of course, clamoring for breakfast. And then he looked at me and in a heartbreaking way said, "I hate you, Mommy." Now he's three. But there's something about hearing the H word that puts you in a place, you know? He followed that up with, "And I hate Santa." No. Yeah, yeah. So I think what he was doing, I like to think, is that he was trying on words, and he knows that certain words get certain reactions from people. And he likes to push the envelope. He's a contradictory kind of guy. He's three, but it's also kind of just wrapped up in his nature to push and to see where that's going to take you. To be able to say with a bright affect how much he hates me makes me think that he's still trying on that word and trying to figure out what it is. It's easy to want to correct him and say, "Actually, I think what you mean is that you just love me with your whole heart." But that's not what's needed in that moment, is it? We don't use that. Can you hear it in your own mind? We don't use that word, hate. Because you imagine him on the playground in the sandbox, breaking it out. Lately, he's also gotten into the, "You're not my best friend anymore." "You're not my best friend." Opposite day. Foolishness is wisdom. Wisdom is foolishness. What is the lesson to be learned from a three-year-old who is trying something on and learning the power of words? That's something that Paul knew well. He knew more than one language. He knew more than one custom, more than one culture. He was a Jew, but was deeply steeped in Greek culture and was ministering not only to Jews, but to also those who were very familiar with what it meant to be Greek, influenced by a Roman rule. There in Corinth, that was the aspect of this place that had been reestablished in the years before Jesus' birth as a place where they sent former slaves and those who were being rehabilitated. It became a mercantile spot, and it was a kind of a sordid reputation, if you will. Sin City is how it often was considered. And so Paul, in the years before he's written this letter, has established a community there, and he established it and then went away. And when you go away, the mice will play, as it goes. And so there were other leaders that came in, were teaching things that were a little bit in contrast to what he had offered. He goes into that a little before our passage and somewhat after. But his essential message is that no matter who the one is that's giving that initial message and testimony, that ultimately we are looking to opposite day. Anything that you're hearing when you go out on the streets is a thing that should be lifted up, and that which is your guiding principle. Most assuredly, it's going to come into contrast with what it is to follow the cross. Because constantly the cross is the thing that is upending our sense of strength as it comes out in society, and certainly was upending what was expected in Jewish custom or in Greek philosophy. Now, as I was thinking through this, I'd been spending a lot of time in the life of St. Francis of Assisi, in part because I've been looking into the call of the holy fool. Sometimes it's because I am carrying a balloon on the corner, as some of you may know, 2 to 3 to 4 times a week, sometimes out on the corner holding a balloon and waving at people. And as I've been called into this, I've just wanted to research more what it means to resist a sense of foolishness and then to live out this place of uncertainty. I don't know how people are going to continue to receive that. Some people have negative feelings. Some people have positive. I'm learning through that process and ultimately very, very humbled, because there's some days in which I don't want to go out there. But it's part of a spiritual discipline I've taken on. And as we live into the covenants of what it means to be community, is sometimes we take on personal practices and we don't always know what the end result is going to be of them. And so my question is, as I continue to tell you about it, it's not so much to uplift my presence out there, is for you to continue to be thinking about what it is that you're doing in here and in your own practice that speaks to the joy of God's love and ultimately is looking for the ways that get through the divides, right? The either-or sense of nature, the Jews or the Greeks, the male or the female, all the things that divide us and leave us feeling divisive. Perhaps you've felt a little divisive this week in the news, right? Because our wisdom often comes in courtrooms and boardrooms. And when we look and we see perhaps a dysfunction as it exists beyond us, sometimes at a government level, when we don't understand what's going on, and we could say either or, who is right, who is wrong. Paul seems to be showing up in the midst of that and saying, It's not about shame or superiority. It's about suffering. It's about the cross. And it's about looking for what you described, a unity, a unifying message of the Spirit that's going to allow even those you seem to hate to also have the divine spark inside of them. And that even if they're not in community and you're out interacting, that they should see by your actions, your humility, your weakness, your ability to be present to the Spirit of God, the Spirit of the cross should be available and seen. And by your actions out there, those who don't yet know what it is to be a Christian community should be learning just from what they're seeing from you. And so in the life of St. Francis of Assisi, he was known in that 13th century there for being the fool. You may know some of his story, that he was born into a wealthy family. At different points in time, he had serious illness and then fought as a soldier a little bit. And then came to a point where he decided, divinely inspired, that he was going to renounce all of his wealth and go out and take off his clothes even. He was naked in the square at one point. And he went physically out to a church that was in ruins, San Damiano, and started physically to getting bricks, and one by one, putting those bricks on top of each other. He clothed the naked and sought to bring healing to those who were hungry and thirsty. He met with the suffering and started to see, as you know through his legacy, oftentimes that unity of the Spirit that extended to all of creation, a man throughout time, beyond his time, one who was starting to see that sense of the universal in the bumblebee. Brother sun, sister moon. Could see the unifying element of the Spirit as it would exist in the wealthy, his father, the merchant, in the priests who were often exploiting the needs of the poor, and also those who were then letting him into his home and feeding him, just as they had done with Jesus. Walking into unexpected places and not being afraid to go into places of deep division to maintain a relationship with the priests, even in a place of contrast with them, but not to be sucked in, but what the privileges of power would bring, and to continue to find this line in which he was present to the poor and present to the priest, just as Jesus found a way. You may not know this story of St. Francis, I had just learned it, but it seems so illustrative of both of those points, solidarity with the suffering and the unity of the Spirit. The Crusades, they'd started in 1095, and there were nine of them. Nine Crusades. And if you'll remember, the impetus behind the Crusades was to go and adjust in holy war, to go to the Holy Land and seek to recapture it on the behalf of largely what was then Europeans, to go in and to try and not only topple the infidels, but to convert them with the sword. Sometimes that flag was emblazoned with what? A cross, right? And put up out there to show that this is who was working on behalf of God. The slogan was Deus Vult, which meant God's will. So long about 1219, as Francis himself had been tempted at one point in his earlier life to want to go and to be a part of such a holy crusade, and as he saw the young men and those in his own society being pulled into this kind of temptation to do so, he started to feel a call upon his heart to go into a place of some deep division and send a different message. At this time, the popes and others were seeking to offer indulgences to spur on those who would fight. What do we mean by indulgences? But selling special favor, spiritual favor, some things that we can't always see, but in guaranteeing eternal life for those who would take up the sword and follow. Guaranteeing the pardoning of sins, the pardoning of your ancestors even, right? So that you could go and feel like you were dying for God's cause. But he rallied against that. Even before he went, he was talking about what he did not believe was God's will. For he saw the suffering, the toll that this patriotic zeal took on behalf of the people, those who were going off to die, and those that they would kill, those on the other side of the war on behalf of what was supposedly God's will. St. Francis said, that's seemingly your wisdom, but that is foolishness. The opposite is true. And on his calling, guess what he did? He wasn't able to do it several times, but finally He got up his belongings and he went all the way to Egypt. 12:19. He was there to see the Sultan. And somehow he was granted a council with the Sultan. Can you imagine the report that some holy fool is at your doorstep? Sultan Malik al-Kamil eventually allowed Francis to have an audience with him. But you'll be mistaken if you think Francis was there to convert him or to preach to him. He'd already preached to the ones he thought he had the most influence with, the Christians that he was leaving behind, his own brothers. We don't know the transcript. I would love to see it, of what transpired behind palace doors. But we do know that at the end of that encounter, Francis walks away with a horn that was used for the Islamic call to prayer. In the height of the Crusades, the fool Francis entered enemy territory, had a council with the highest person in the land, and walks away not only with his life, which he wasn't sure he was going to when he started out, and a holy symbol from another culture and another religion, one that was so important as it called out everyone to gather for the presence of God. To this day, there's a horn at Assisi believed to be this very instrument. This, more than the flag that seemed to bear the cross, this horn in and of itself was the cross. Do you see? Given and offered in humility, because Francis came in humility, bearing and showing that weakness across the divide. We know that today we don't seem to have a divide, right, between East and West. We don't hear this in terms of how we talk about people that live in other places, or how we dictate or legislate who can come and cross borders and who can't. So entrenched is this reality for us, for Paul, in Jesus' time, for Francis, that we come to find out that it's not that we don't know that there are going to be divisions, it's how we will continue to meet them. That is what Francis shows us, is the courage to show up into the deep divide. At great cost to himself, perhaps his life, for everyone continuing to think he's the deepest fool around. They downplayed it in his biography because they're like, oh yeah, and this other thing that Francis did. Because the patriotic zeal and the religiousness of the day dictated what sounded wise and what didn't. How do we continue to show up to these places? I had the opportunity several years ago to hear the eminent black theologian James Cone speak. And I was telling this to the worship task group because it so continues to be impactful for me. He's since died. But this is a man who began to see and wrote many, many books. But one of the last he wrote was called The Cross and the Lynching Tree. In part because for him it was so very obvious that although we're not wearing nooses and electric chairs on our necks, that the equivalent of what it meant and the shame and the stigma of the cross of that day of Jesus and of Paul meant that plucking out what has caused a society to be so divided or to heap shame or superiority onto others at the expense of the lives of those who would otherwise be innocent meant that in his own culture, an understanding of what it meant to be African American meant unpacking and naming that lynching tree for what it was. And so he would say powerful things that continue to stir us, and particularly as those historical moments would be called out, he would look and he would see the irony of 20th century white Christians who felt that they were somehow following Christ, not yelling crucify him, but yelling lynch him, going out and killing, and believing that that was somehow representative of the weakness of the cross. In that legacy, James Cone had continued to speak into the divide, because it sometimes is East and West, sometimes is white and black, sometimes is Republican and Democrat. We can fill in the blank. But the courage to go and tread into those uncomfortable places, to show up into them, and then to believe that we have a practice, Francis's practice to speak and find a word of truth and to listen, means that as I was sitting there that day and the question came at the very end by a middle-aged white woman in the back, a member of that church particularly, and I say this believing that she was representing most of those of us who consider ourselves good-intentioned white people, she said, "My church was involved in civil rights, and we've done a lot around social justice over the years. And my question for you, Dr. Cohn, is what now should we do?" And James Cohn did not miss a beat because he's been in a lot of these kind of settings. And he said, "How much are you willing to pay?" You let that sink in a lingering way that meant more than dollar signs. Although many of us may have been thinking about Ta-Nehisi Coates and the case of reparations and what the physical cost would be to truly giving oneself over to that word. But there's something more. There's something more that question requires of us, and there's something more that the cross requires of us. If we know that it means giving up our own wisdom, it means giving up most of the wisdom that we absorb from the news and other places in our society and transforming it on its head so that it looks something like a humble, dirty monk walking over the course of the land until we arrive to Egypt. Because isn't that the Holy Family's track too, as refugees going to the place of Egypt, the border crossing, the place that is uncomfortable, and humbling oneself in a different place, in a different custom? Friends, it's going to cost something of us. Coming to the table today, it costs something of us in our own humility to give up the wisdom that we think we hold. And we hold many identities overlappingly, just as the people in Corinth did. Some were Jew and Greek. And the critique is to speak into those divisive identities we hold in ourselves, and to continue to meet the suffering of the world, whether it's the soldiers, or the one born into poverty, or racism, addiction, whatever it is. And the other is to continually see a unitive quality of the Spirit that transcends that religious divide, that transcends that partisan divide, and to walk into it with humility, sometimes having to let go of the wisdom that we're just absolutely sure that we've got. So my curiosity for you today, friends, is what practice is it that helps you center into those places to remember the cross that leads you through the divide? What is it when you see the senselessness of our world, sometimes by violence and sometimes by accident, and know that there's these formative three-year-olds asking questions about how we use our words? As we saw the death of Kobe Bryant and his daughter this past week, I was so surprised at how much that weighed upon my spirit. As a mother, as someone who would ache for that family who had lost someone, for all of the good that that person has done, the celebrity that has been used in good places, for the complicated nature of a legacy too, right? For the complicated legacy of the things that he had done in his life or not done, how we deal with that. But ultimately too, a daughter that died with him and all the other ones in the helicopter. And it was a reminder to me that, of course, there's something that the cross has to say when things don't seem sensical. There's a weakness and a mercy that shows up in all of the divide of, you saw, with all the basketball rivalries, right, coming together and having something to say about the loss of this individual, crossing those divides. But it also shines light on the deaths that are routinely happening, not as a result of an accident, but as a result of natural disaster or these wars or the violence or the borders that have been closed. And we realize that we have something to say. That the foolishness of this gospel story, the foolishness of the cross, means a pathway. And means that sometimes the cross will look just as it does, fashioned out of formal tools and barbed wire. Sometimes it'll look like the cross that Marcia's wearing on her neck, that were some of the nails that were excavated on this property. Sometimes it'll look like a horn. It's calling people to prayer outside your own tradition. Look for the cross, my friends. When you hear the word hate, maybe it starts to sound like love. And when you think about your practice and you're able to show up in the midst of your fatigue, because aren't you tired sometimes? When you show up, know that you're surrounded by others who are seeking to enter the divide, to go inside of it, and to know that together as you meet the cost of that, that at the same time you're being filled up with new life. Bread, simple. Juice, wine, that which would have already been on the table. Jesus repurposes it through the cross and said, the very weakest and normal things in your midst are going to be that which helps you meet me in the suffering of this world and seek to join all of humanity into something we don't always understand, but something in which we can see, as evidenced by the cross, a pathway forward into peace that passes our own understanding. Amen.